Okay, from detectives now to a product you would have tasted and had a bit of in the coffee break, the products of the labours of our next speaker, Sophie Tranchill. She's the CEO of Divine Chocolate, and she's going to help us understand how you overcome and have the bravery needed to create a business from scratch that then takes on massive organisations like Cadbury and Nestle. She'll give a short presentation and then I'll have a bit of a Q&A with her. So please, ladies and gentlemen, welcome the Group Chief of the social enterprise Divine Chocolate, Sophie Tranchill.
So when I was 32, I found myself running a film distribution company and a cinema in the West End. And I ended up doing that because my boss dropped dead. And so I didn't plan it, and it was really scary, and it was really stressful. But thinking about the theme of this conference, it actually wasn't brave because I didn't have a choice. I ended up releasing some of the most controversial films of the time. So I released films like Man Bites Dog, and Hamon Hamon, and Golden Balls, La Haine. And I think the one that sort of made me start to think was I released The Idiots by Lars von Trier. And so I was the face of releasing this film. And I completely understood intellectually why adults in Britain should be allowed to watch what they want. But I didn't really understand why I was doing it. And I hadn't made a choice. I just carried on doing what sort of had come in front of me. And so it wasn't brave, but it was scary and it was stressful. But then I saw an advert in the newspaper. I saw a little tiny advert to come and work for a company, a startup company called Divine Chocolate, which was owned by cocoa farmers. And I thought that that was a really exciting idea, and it was really brave, I think. I think it was one of the bravest things I did to apply for that job, because I had a good job by then. I was the managing director of a film company. It's the sort of job anybody would want to have. I was running a cinema in the West End. It was an exciting place to be. I was going to Cannes Film Festival and doing deals with television executives. But I saw this little advert, and I actually thought, no, this is what I can care about. This can be my purpose. It can be something that I'm proud to tell my grandmother about. And it can be something I'm proud to share with my small children, because my children were 2 and 5 at the time. And so I applied for the job and had a quite a strange experience, because they actually, on the day of the interview, told me not to bother to come. And I took the phone call and I'd taken the day off, and I said, well, I've taken the day off and I'm kind of ready to come, and it sounds like a really interesting company, so I'm going to come anyway. So I went for that interview, and in that evening I got a call saying they were recruiting a team, and they said to me, would I be the managing director? And I thought, well, yeah, that's fantastic, I'll go and be the managing director. I had to give 3 months' notice because I was running a company. And so while I was still on notice, they said to me, could I come to Ghana? Could I come to the farmers' AGM? Because that's where the story starts. So I found myself in this village. You'll have to excuse me, because being a woman of 54, both my eyesight's gone and my memory's got a lot worse. And so I'm having to work from notes, unlike these lovely people who can walk around all the time. and so this is the village I ended up finding myself in. And it's a funny place to be when you thought you were joining a chocolate company. So the chocolate industry in 1999 was worth 86.6 billion worldwide. Yet despite supplying this hugely valuable market, cocoa farmers lived in poverty. They still live in poverty. That's still what it looks like. So chocolate lovers enjoy their favourite treat, had no idea the huge chasm between them and the farmers whose lives were dependent on them. So Divine's mission was to address that inequality. It was to bring chocolate lovers with us on a journey. We were going to be telling them about the chocolate company that was owned by cocoa farmers who live in houses like that. So when we started, I met lots of lovely people who heard the story that we were wanting to do. So we wanted to make a chocolate company work in one of the most valuable markets in the world. And we had virtually no money. And they all went, well, that's a really nice idea, but I'm sure, you know, it'll never work. And we went round and we talked to lots of people, and we found in the end some very imaginative and brave investors. But even they wrote it off on their books. So people like The Body Shop invested in Divine, but they didn't really think it would work. People like Christian Aid put money in it, but they didn't really think it would work. But they did at least have the sort of the vision to take a risk and try. So this is Kwame, and he's a four-year-old boy. And I met him the next year, and I was the first white person he'd ever seen. And that was terrifying for him, because sort of we looked like ghosts. And he had his hand really tightly clenched when I met him, and I asked him to open his hand, and he had this enormous bug in his hand, and that was terrifying to me. But it was his pet. So I think what I learned from that first challenge was actually, if you want to create a better world, you've got to have the imagination to have a vision of what that would look like, and you've got to be able to tell a good story and get people to come along with you. So who knows what that is? Anybody know what that is? It's a cocoa pod. So when I started in Divine 20 years ago, I'd go in and I'd, you know, by being a really, really annoying person, get into the, you know, the chocolate buyer in Tesco's. And the question I'd ask them was, where does chocolate come from? And they'd look at me like, God, I've let this crazy lady in the door. What on earth is she talking about now? And they'd say, well, it comes from Cadbury's, you know, it comes from Birmingham, doesn't it? And I'd go, no, I don't mean that. And they'd say, well, some of it comes from Belgium, you know, the man with the tall hat and the sort of drippy stuff. And I'd go, no. And then they'd say, well, maybe Switzerland with the mountains and the milk, you know, that's got nice chocolate. And I'd say, no, but where does the cocoa come from? And 20 years ago, nobody knew that. Nobody'd asked that question. Nobody had seen a cocoa pod. And nobody realised that 70% of the world's cocoa and virtually all of the cocoa that you eat in your chocolate that you enjoy most days comes from West Africa. And so actually, in meeting that really charming buyer from Tesco's, I hope they're not here today, I changed their lives that day because it changed what they were thinking about. They expected me to come in the door and say to them how much money I was going to spend on advertising and how much margin they'd make. But I didn't. I made them think about the thing that they were selling. And it meant that they remembered us. And when the opportunity arose, they gave us the chance to actually put our product in front of UK chocolate lovers. So Divine is a very small player in a very mature and competitive market. We were keen to compete with the big boys and actually show people that you could do business differently and be successful. At the time, the UK chocolate market was worth £4.6 billion, and 80% of that was owned by Cadbury's, Nestle, Mars and Kraft. And since then, you've only seen that be consolidated. And so actually less people now own that very, very competitive and mature market. On the top 10 products, 20 years ago, we're spending about, in the UK, about £4 to £5 million above the line. And so how were we going to compete in a market like that? Well, we had great chocolate, and that's actually why I'm still here today. We've always had great chocolate, and people have been surprised by how great our chocolate is. But we also had a different story to tell. We made you think a different thought when you were eating that chocolate. And so marketing Divine has been one of those challenges. And because you're marketeers, I thought I would share that challenge with you. So on the one hand, we want to appeal to chocolate lovers' desire to indulge and reward themselves. We want it to be fulfilling. We want it to be a treat. But on the other hand, we wanted people to make an altruistic choice, one which delivered good for other people far away, which they'd never even heard of. We were asking them to engage conflicting areas of their brain, to use different sides of it when making a choice in the supermarket. And you can see here us tackling that with this communication, which St. Luke's agency did for us. I'm not sure that it sold a lot of chocolate, but it did make people notice us. These are cocoa farmers. They're young women, again, people who get ignored, so even in Ghana. And so they're women with attitude. So if you think about the ladies who've been selling you chocolate through the ages, the flake girl, then these are women who've got something else to say. They're challenging you to try their chocolate. It was surprising and it was disruptive. It was high quality. We took advertising photographers out and we put these adverts in places like Hello and OK magazine. So it was disruptive to see it there, but the textures were glorious and it made you think a different thought. But this, what I've found through the years is we've worked with lots of people and we've only ever had very little bits of money and we've found ways to tell the stories of farmers. But I don't think anything has been better than farmers telling a story for themselves. It's a high-risk strategy because you don't know what they're going to say, because real people say real things and they're unpredictable. But this is Mr. Boer, and he's the elected president of Quapa Coco, the farmers' cooperative that owns 44% of Divine Chocolate. We have bought over farmers every year for 20 years. We've bought over surprising amounts of women, both young and old, and they've told their own stories, and nothing is more compelling than hearing someone's own story. Hearing how they spend their lives growing cocoa so that we can enjoy chocolate, and hearing the difference that the little bit of money extra that people pay for a fair trade product makes to their lives. It gives them the ability to take control of their communities, to invest in education and health, and to put food on the table. I love this picture. It's probably my favourite picture from my 20 years because this is a real picture. It's not photoshopped. That's our taxi, which we were really delighted to have. We only had one. And that's Tower Bridge, which is right next to our office. And that's President Boer wearing his own clothes in a photograph next to Tower Bridge because he came here because he owns our company. So we wanted to challenge how business was being done. And I think today we've heard a lot about what success looks like. And in some ways, I was disappointed because success is about growing and it's about getting big. Is that all that success is about? Is that really what success is about? Is that how we're going to save the planet? And so we've had lots of conversations about how big is big enough. And being big did mean we had to become braver, because when we started, in some respects, we had nothing to lose. But once we had something, once we'd got to a break-even point, we did have something to lose. But we wanted to be different, and we wanted to show that you really could be different, so we had to get bigger. And so we had conversations about how big was good, big enough. And we needed to be big enough to survive the impacts, I suppose, of the market. The things like the recession and Brexit. Brexit, on you know, since Brexit, the exchange rate has meant our cost of goods has gone up by 25%. And so having enough insulation as a small company to be able to survive that was the size that we felt we needed to get to. I think the other question, though, if you're rewriting what success in business looks like, is actually everybody thinks that it's about growing your business, building your brand, and selling it on to the biggest player. And getting rich. And so actually we were really tearing up that script. And so there's been a lot of people being bought and sold over the 20 years, and some of them have been in chocolate. So when Cadbury's bought Green and Blacks, who got rich? Well, the person who had the good idea and the management team at the time. And then Cadbury's got bought by Kraft, and who got rich? Well, the shareholders got rich, and they got very rich out of it, actually. And the same's true of when those young men who set up Innocence, who did it at the same day as Divine was set up, so I had the stall next to them when they had that thing where you had to do the voting of whether they should give up their day job. And they've got very rich by selling Innocence to Coca-Cola. And in this weekend, you saw Montezuma, again, get rich because they sold their shares, half their shares in Montezuma. But if Divine gets sold, I won't get rich at all. I don't own any shares. But the farmers in Ghana, who you'd never heard of, they'll get 44% of the money. And they'll get to decide whether they sell it or not. And so my final slide is, it's been worth it. This is Jenny. And we now have a profitable business in the UK and the USA. And that's no mean feat, I think. We turned over £15 million. And I've employed 30 people on really nice jobs, doing something that they're proud of and that they'd be proud to tell anyone they met anywhere about. We've created for a business that creates four income streams for farmers, a fair trade price, a fair trade premium. We invest 2% of our turnover in working with farmers and recognising that if they're working in remote and rural places in Ghana and that they have an 85% illiteracy level among women, there's going to be challenges that you haven't thought of. But they also get 44% of any distributed profits. But I think it's been worth it because young people like Jennifer are coming into cocoa farming, and if she doesn't do that, then we won't be able to eat any more chocolate because there won't be any more cocoa. And ultimately, because I've come and spoken to you today, you've got to know about people like Jennifer and Mr. Buer and Kwame. And equally important, I think, people like Jennifer and Mr. Buer and Kwame have got to know about people like you. And so we've made this world a smaller place. We've got people to appreciate that they have the same hopes and fears. They want to send their children to school. They want their children to be happy and healthy. And that actually, that we have an opportunity to do that when we pick the things that we buy every day. So we've got a long way to go, and I hope that that gives you some inspiration and some cause to be brave. Thank you so much.
So, Sophie, you've described yourself as a radical. Would you still say that you're a radical? And just with the theme of today's conference, what's the difference between being brave and being a radical?
I think lots of the things that people have described today have been about being personally brave. And I think coming here today, for me, was brave because I don't have to speak in front of marketeers very often. And it's nerve-wracking to speak in a room like this. But I think being radical is actually seeing a different way of solving a problem. It's about recognising that we can't carry on doing what we've been doing and expect the outcome to be different. So with a hugely growing population, we are burning the Earth's resources at a rate that means we won't be able to deliver a sensible living for most of the people living on the planet. And so I think that being radical is, I think, the Divine Chocolate Company model, where the farmers own a significant share of it and have a say in how the company is run, is a radical model. We're putting the farmers right in the middle of the proposition. They are getting a share of the wealth that they're helping to create for the first time in history. But we're also personalising the supply chain so that people can recognise that whatever it is that you spend your money on, you actually have an impact on people far away or near. By the decisions you make.
What's the bravest decision you've made?
I think one of the bravest business decisions I made was that I've been the managing director and then the CEO for 20 years. And my line manager is the chair of the company. And for the first 10 years, I had the chair who was the founder of the company, and we worked fantastically together. And then I had a chair who was absolutely supportive of helping farmers, but in a way, in a very old-fashioned way, a benevolent way, where you were giving people charity in a way, and I could really tell that wasn't going to work. And so you sort of had the choice of, do you jump ship and leave the company because it's not really the company you thought it was, or, unlike, you know, or like Caroline, do you close it down, or do you actually stand in there and fight? And so I actually recognised that he wasn't the right person. I helped him leave, and I really fought for the person who came next to be somebody who understood the mission and who could take us to the next step and could help us build the company in America. That was a big risk. I mean, so setting up a company in America when we were a teeny company in Britain, that was a brave thing to do as well. But I do think that on a personal level, that was probably the bravest thing I had to do, because it was down to me. I had to actually say, if you don't take what I'm saying, I'm leaving. This is the deal I'm offering you.
I would say, I mean, walking away from, when you're at the top of your game, which you were in the film and distribution business. I mean, some of the other speakers spoke about the more successful you become, the harder it is, the more you've got to lose. You know, failure seems like something you don't want. So for you, I mean, certainly for me, listening to you, and I don't know for the rest of the audience, it's quite difficult to sort of walk away from something you've established and then to start from scratch again.
I think it's really exciting. I think we live a long time and we've got a long working life nowadays. And so I think there is a potential to get complacent and to get bored. And so I think starting again is exciting. But also, what an amazing opportunity. As a young person, I spent a lot of time, I'm an activist, I spent a lot of time campaigning for anti-apartheid. And the tool that was used was about boycotting. And so using the power in your purse to say you didn't support apartheid. And so that sense of seeing a chocolate company that actually could turn that into a positive purchase and offering somebody a brand as lovely as Divine with chocolate that was as tasty as Divine but owned by cocoa farmers and was putting business on his head was an absolutely irresistible opportunity and an amazing chance to put a team together who believed that too.
You've said that you're about collaboration and not competition. I mean, how do you balance that, especially with a growing business that you want to remain competitive?
So obviously we are competitive with other chocolate companies and I'm not pretending we're not. So for a company as small as we are, working in an industry as mature and dominated by brands that we all love. So psychologically, when you ask somebody what's chocolate in Britain, they'll say Cadbury's. How do we get there? Then collaboration offered us an opportunity to reach beyond what we could possibly have bought. And so the partnerships that we did with people like Comic Relief, so right early on, Comic Relief did Celebrity Big Brother, which had the most incredible viewership. And they gave us the indents, the advertising indents. And so all I had was that I had 4 weeks to get somebody to produce the indents, well, to write them, produce them, get them censored and get them on there. And we managed to do it, and we did it all for free. I mean, so everybody donated their services. And it meant that we got Divine in front of those 10 million people that watched that first Celebrity Big Brother. And we could have never done it without that sort of partnership.
Sophie Tranchell, thank you so much for talking to us today. Thank you.